Hello and welcome to the Disney Magic Hour, episode number 144. On this week's show, we're going to give you our top Disney movie guilty pleasures. Joining me via Skype from the Main Street Gazette is Ryan Wilson. Say hello, Ryan.
Hello, Ryan.
And also joining us via Skype is Courtney Van Ren. Say hello, Courtney.
Hello, Courtney.
Hello, Pete. Melissa's not with us this weekend, so she's visiting family over at home. But say hello, Melissa, from a distance. Hello. This episode of Disney Magic Hour is brought to you by MEI Travel for all your vacation planning needs. For visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, or traveling anywhere around the globe, visit the experts over at MEI-travel.com, where Becky and her team can get you started on your own adventure. We are lastgenpodcast.com. That's L-A-S-T-G-E-N podcast.com. You can find us on Twitter at DizMagicHourPod. We're on Facebook. If you search for Disney Magic Hour, we got a group going there. If you're already there, add your friends. You can find this show on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher. And we do have an Instagram, which if you search at Disney Magic Hour Podcast, you'll find that. And if you want to support the show and ensure its survivability, you can go over to patreon.com/DisneyMagicHour. And we have some new stuff coming out over there. We got some exclusive podcasts for our Patreons. And we have the screenings that we're going to be doing once a month. So we can basically make it up for everyone who can never make the ones that are weekly. And Ryan, where can everyone find you in the Main Street Gazette?
They can find it at mainstgazette.com. If you're looking for us on Twitter or Instagram, it's Main ST Gazette. And if you search Main Street Gazette on Facebook, you'll find the page.
And Courtney, where can everyone find out about the DMH Book Club?
You can search for us on Facebook with DMH Book Club. We just finished up The Princess Fugitive, and we're going to be starting a novella about Snow White and Rose Red. So join us over there.
There you go, guys. Welcome this week of month and time and year.
Yes. Hello, time of year, July end.
End of July. It's too hot. It's too hot, and it's 9 in the morning.
It's all right over here.
How is it up there?
It's pretty good. I think it's like 70-ish.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's pretty nice this morning.
I felt a cool breeze last week, and I got very excited. We were in Universal Studios, and a storm came blowing through, and there was an actual cold breeze, which I hadn't felt in months. So
it's pretty still up here though. Like it's cool, but it's going to get hot and there's no breeze today. So we're going to, we'll suffer later.
I think it's like 90 something again today. Weather, who cares? Whatever. Let's talk about movies.
Yeah.
So we are going to talk this week about guilty pleasure movies. Now, the thing is, I know that right as we start talking about this, I had this one thought. I was like, I don't really kind of feel guilty about anything I watch. I'm fine with it. But there is that line of like, you're watching something and in your head, you might say, this is bad, but I enjoy it. You know, like that's sort of the line that I had to make. There is one movie on here that legitimately I am guilty of enjoying. There's one. And it has reared its head in the way that I watch it. And it'll make more sense when I get to it. But so, Ryan, why don't you get us started? Why don't you give us one of your – what are we going to give, three each? I got five. I'll tell you right now. I do have five.
But two of them I can keep going on the list. I pulled three, but I could go on for a while on these kind of things. But
I think also I'm stretching maybe on one of them. I had to double check whether or not it was Disney because I am including films in the Touchstone universe, if that's a thing.
I also have six honorable mentions, so don't worry about
good,
it.
Good, sure.
Then are we going to go like 3, 2, 1, or are we just naming our top three?
I can't number this. These are all nightmares. All right. Yeah, this is so. Ryan, why don't you start with yours?
So speaking of the Touchstone universe, and this is what we talked about a lot about recently, I think I just get it out of the way is Dick Tracy. Whether it's the coloring back, you know, the way they did the colored backdrops and the flat backdrops, you have the prosthetics on the villains, and they have ridiculous names. Like just the way it's done, it's one of those movies I think it's a much better that people give it credit for, and I will sit down any day of the week to watch that movie.
I haven't watched it in so long. I know I should, or should
we'll get
I?
There.
I don't know.
We'll get there.
Yeah, that's right. I guess I kind of have to, so I don't really have to rush towards it. I don't remember if I remember liking it as a kid. I remember liking it as a kid. It's very bright.
Very bright, and that was trying to like. I think encapsulate like the comic book or the comic strip feel of it to give it that kind of that kitsch. And it, you know, I don't know. There's just stuff about it that I really, really love. There was also a great McDonald's tie-in game that if anybody ever remembers.
No.
I actually think I have like one of the biggest collections of those game pieces, because I thought they were like, it was like a detective game almost. And I was like, this is great. I still have just a ton of those for whatever reason, stashed in a drawer somewhere. But it was just, I don't know, it was fun. You know, I kept waiting for there to be a sequel. I think they kind of leave it a little bit more open-ended to make you think you're going to get more of this, and you never did. I think Warren Beatty had plans to continue on with that role until he died, and that didn't work out for him.
I'm actually really surprised they never made a follow-up, because it did have success. I thought it did anyway. It seemed popular.
It's one of the things I think, like, that people went and saw, and then nobody would admit they went and saw the movie for some reason.
Avatar. Got it.
Right.
Was this the one? I think Stan Solo was saying that they, when you pre-purchased tickets for Dick Tracy, they gave you shirts, and that's how you got into the theater. Is that right?
So some of them did. So the midnight showing that when it first came out, it was like I was there, like a ticket for the T-shirt. The studios actually, it was where they did the world premiere. They did it at Pleasure Island, because this was at the day and age when the studios was opening, Typhoon Lagoon was opening, Pleasure Island was all opening all at one time. And so the AMC theater there, they did the world premiere of the movie, and it actually had special things that said, you know, I was there, and it said Disney MGM Studios on it, rather than a space for you to write in like your local theater or whatever you wanted to do. So there were those shirts as well. But they made special shirts for the premiere of this.
That's cool.
All right. Courtney, you want to go next?
Sure. My first on my guilty pleasure list is going to be Pete's Dragon. We just talked about that ad nauseum, so I don't need to go into it too in depth, but Elliot is just one of my favorite characters in all of Disney canon. I think he's adorable, even though he's super annoying and gets this kid into way too much trouble. I also am aware, which is why I'm putting in the guilty pleasure section, that there are far too many songs in the movie, and not all of them are winners. But on the other hand, one of my top five favorite Disney songs of all time is in this movie. So I kind of have to overlook that a little bit. And then there's also, you know, great performances by some, you know, stellar cast. So, and you know, all of my picks have major nostalgia factor involved. This is definitely high on that, on the nostalgia, scale for me. So yeah, Pete's Dragon.
You know, I feel like it came off that I hated Pete's Dragon. Melissa hated Pete's Dragon. I didn't hate Pete's Dragon. I just thought it was too long. I was like, yeah, this could be cut down like a half hour.
Definitely too long.
Yeah. What was the villain's name again?
Dr. Terminus.
He was the best.
Well,
was that his name?
Yeah. If you want to consider Dr. Terminus the villain, there's a dual villain situation happening.
Is with it Doctor? Yeah, no, it's a doctor. Yeah, for me, it was
Dr.
Yeah,
Terminus. Dr. Terminus. Yeah. But then you also have Pete's family.
Who bought
oh,
him.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's the right. Gogans. Kinnicky. Yeah, I forgot.
Yeah.
I forgot Kinnicky was in that too. So my first movie comes from when I used to work in a movie theater. It was a Disney release. It wasn't very popular, but you put on Mouse Hunt and I'm a happy little boy. Mouse Hunt was with Nathan Lane, Lee Evans, and Christopher Walken, and a nearly dead William Hickey. And actually, I kind of think it was William Hickey's last movie. If you don't know who William Hickey is, you definitely know who William Hickey is. He's a really old guy from My Blue Heaven, and he voiced the professor and the doctor or the scientist in Nightmare Before Christmas. Nathan Lane says Hakuna Matata. Christopher Walken eats mice crap. It's really dumb. It's really dumb, but I sat in that theater all the time. I just found that movie hysterical for no apparent reason. It's never something that I seek out, but if it's ever, like, if I've noticed, I think it was actually on demand on HBO for a long time, and I watched it pretty frequently, but I don't own it. I had never made an effort to own it. I don't talk to anyone about it. It's not something that I reference, like when we talk about underappreciated or anything. It just exists in that weird 90s era, which also brought another movie that I'll probably bring up later. It's actually the same year they released two movies that no one cared about at all. But Mouse Hunt is right up there for me. If you haven't seen it, Christopher Walken is kind of worth the ticket price. And even Ernie Sabella shows up, who is the voice of Pumbaa. So he's in there, too. So Timon and Pumbaa are in this, just so you know.
Not that I was expecting anything from either of you, but this would definitely be the last thing I was expecting from you.
Oh, I think I have some more that are like a little more like, that makes sense. Okay. But yeah, Mouse Hunt, it's one of them. Ryan, what else you got?
All right, I'm going to go back a couple of decades. We're sticking to like kind of the era of films in our childhood. This is from my childhood, but it was released decades before. And I'm going to go with Yellowstone Cubs. And yep. The faces. I wish you all could have seen the faces I just got.
What the hell is that?
Between what is that and really? This was released in 1963, and it actually was packaged with both during the summer of 63. It was packaged with Savage Sam and with Summer Magic. It's only like about a 30 to 45 minute film, and it follows these two bears, Tubby and Tuffy, and their mom, who gets separated, and mom basically gets in trouble because she's trying to find her cubs, and they didn't realize that she was still having cubs, and so they thought that she was just being a menace. And meanwhile, the cubs are wrecking campsites, destroying boats, turning the lodge upside down. Like, it's just it's ridiculous. It's clearly, some of the footage is stuff that they use from Disney nature films. Some of it is just stuff where they've convince these bears to do horrible, horrible things. And I love this movie so much. It's narrated by Rex Allen, who is just Disney staple. And you'd recognize his voice immediately. There's a song tied to it. It's just, I don't know why. I've watched this movie since I was 5 years old, and it drives my wife nuts when I put it on, but I will still watch this movie to this day.
You know, you brought up Summer Magic. I almost put Summer Magic on here, but I was like, I have no shame in that movie. The movie's great. So I couldn't enjoy it.
There are plenty of movies I almost put on this list, and I'm like, that's not a guilty pleasure. That movie is well-deserving of that.
Yeah. I've never heard of this one ever. Is it still available? Can you find it?
It is. It's on iTunes. It's on.
It is. Okay. I want to make sure.
Yeah, it's there. I mean, is it probably worth it for most people to buy that movie? No, because Disney charges stupid prices for even the short stuff. But I love it. I think it's just hysterically heartwarming.
Next time I come over, Ryan.
I own it, so we can watch it anytime you'd like. I actually have, and I haven't framed it yet. I have one of the original movie posters for it, like the old folded movie posters that they used to give to theaters. I have one to get framed at some point, and it will be on a wall.
That's awesome.
Courtney, what do you have also on your list?
My next one I have, and I don't know, again, this is one that I'm not sure how well fits the category. I'll let you guys decide. But my next one is Hocus Pocus. This is a big nostalgia pull for me again. We did just talk about this one at Halloween, I think. So a lot of people have heard my thoughts on it. This movie is just so 90s. It just like reminds me of being a kid. You've got Ice and Jay. It's Ice and like points at his head. And I love the practical props in this movie too. I love the black flame candle. I love the spell book. You get Doug Jones as Billy, which, you know, if you get Doug Jones, there's something redeeming about the film, I'd say. And I think this was one of the first times that I was ever like aware of Bette Midler. And like heard really good singing in a movie, because she does the Halloween party scene. I'm
trying to think of like, was Beaches before this?
Yeah,
it was, right? Okay.
Yeah, it was, but I hadn't seen Beaches because I was like a little kid. Beaches wouldn't have been something I would have watched. So this was the first time I think I was aware of her, and she sings the crap of I Put a Spell on You.
Yeah.
And then you have the mom dancing around in her Madonna bra, and
that's right.
It's so good. I watch this one every year at Halloween. I absolutely adore this movie. They just released a Hocus Pocus line of 30th anniversary. 30th? Is that right? 30th anniversary. Holy crap, I'm old. 30th anniversary stuff on shopdisney.com. And there's some stuff I'm going to get on there. But yeah, Hocus Pocus it is.
Hocus Pocus. Oh, by the way, I wasn't saying that like Beaches was the first Bette Midler movie to get big. I just remember, like, being young, that was like the Bette Midler movie.
Yeah.
Before that, it would have been Ruthless People, I guess, was something else that like really popped up. All right, so I'm going to go to a movie that we've actually spoken about in the past. And this is a movie that, since we watched it, I will not buy it. But I have watched it illegally on the internet multiple times. Multiple times. But not the whole thing, because it's like 3.5 hours long. It is The Happiest Millionaire. This has turned into a guilty pleasure movie for me. Because every time I go to one of the musical numbers, it's just goddamn ridiculous. I don't know why I won't buy it. I've looked at it online. I'm like, I'm not doing that. But then I will go to the Irish drinking song in the bar, and I'll watch that thing like 4 or 5 times. And it's always on it's never, ever like through legal means. It's a guilty, guilty pleasure now. And I will argue that it's actually not a bad movie at this point, which is sort of a flip if you listen to that old review. But this movie has, I don't know why, worked over the last number of months since we reviewed it. So it is a guilty pleasure right now because this is the first time I've admitted that I've watched it since then. But maybe this is the first step towards me accepting it and getting it on home media. I don't know what it's available on, actually.
No.
I wonder if it's available on Blu-ray. Like, did they do a Blu-ray of The Happiest Millionaire?
I don't know, but now all I have is Detroit in my head. So thank you for that.
You're welcome, sir. That opening number, it's great. It is. It's not great, but it's fine. And I just keep going back to it. It's not on Blu-ray. Thank God. It's on DVD. I can't buy DVDs. It's below me. Sorry.
When I first looked up to make sure that Yellowstone...
$30. What?
When I first looked up to see Yellowstone Cubs, if it had been released like in theaters to count it here, I was like, at first I thought it said it was paired with The Happiest Millionaire. Like, why would you make that any longer than you have to?
Like, you're going to add like 45 minutes onto this, guys. I think we're a little short on time. Yeah, Happiest Millionaire. If you haven't seen it, I don't know. Don't.
I actually haven't seen it, so I need to put that on my list.
You should really watch it. You would like it. There's so many songs.
It was just before I started the show with you guys.
Oh,
lots of music. Lots of music.
Lots of music. Like, Peach Dragon looks scarce in the musical department when compared to The Happiest Millionaire.
I'm going to add that in Yellowstone Cubs to my list.
Mm, there's 4 hours of your day taken up right there.
Perfect.
Ryan, what else you got over there?
And I was trying to think, I do like this movie, I think it's fine. And again, it's one I thought they should have sequeled many times over. And you and I have talked about this a couple of times, Pete. It's The Rocketeer. And
yes.
Yeah, it's you know, it's in that era of the Dick Tracys, of the Phantom, the Shadow. It's that pulpy kind of, you know, great thing going for it. You have Jennifer Connelly, which I will watch anything with Jennifer Connelly in it, hands down. It's just fun. You know, the guy, the jetpack, that costume is so iconic. You have, you know, we talked about it, we had James Bond Nazi, and it's just. It's so campy and it's so good, and I love it. And I know it's kind of like Hocus Pocus. It's gained a cult following as the years have gone on, to where it's not as, you know, looked down upon as it was, you know, 10, 15 years ago. But I will put it on and be thrilled. I'm still upset that you can't find the soundtrack except for like on a, you know, Japanese import CD at this point. I think that, you know, especially if you're going to use it in Epcot Center, you should go ahead and release the soundtrack, please. I would like to download that.
Yeah.
But it's one of my films to put on a Saturday afternoon when I have, you know, nothing better to do.
Yeah, it has gained a cult following since its post release. But man, did that movie just not show up on anyone's radar when it came out. Yeah. It's sort of like the Blade Runner of Disney in this weird way, where it really, when it came out, everyone was like, eh, and then just moved on. But then years go by and it's still, you know, producing art that people buy and statues and this and that. And it's all based on a movie that's not really very, you know, heavily lauded anymore by Disney. You don't really hear much about it. But I definitely think that if you could do a soft reboot right now, that thing. I really think that would work out.
Yeah, I do too.
Then again, I don't know. Seems like upbeat movies don't do well with audiences anymore. You know, if you have like a semi-positive message, it's like, no, world's on fire. It's like, we know, idiot. It's called escapism.
No, that's just in the DCU. That's you're just thinking DC. you could get away with it in other realms.
Oh, Superman movies. Oh, you know, really, really quick. I saw Mission Impossible Fallout, and everyone should see it. It's absolutely fantastic. And the number one takeaway you're going to get is they are wasting Henry Cavill as Superman. That dude has so much going on, and they are just wasting what could be. He could challenge Reeve for the best, but he's not given that chance at all. At all. Remember, Christopher Reeve, George Reeves. Two different things. Right. Reeves. Who's next? Courtney.
Me?
Courtney, you're next.
I mean, you have to talk about Henry Cavill and then transition to me so that I can talk about Henry Cavill for 1 second. Mm-hmm. Like, Henry Cavill.
Yep.
Okay, I'm done now. And I don't know how to transition from Henry Cavill to my last pick. So I'm just going to tell you.
Is it dark and brooding?
Goofy Movie.
Yep.
Oh.
Goofy Movie is my, like, I ordered mine. Goofy Movie is my number one. I have seen this movie more than any other Disney movie, hands down. I adore all the songs in this movie. Again, this is another one that's 90s realness in animation form. Max wears JNCO jeans. Pauly Shore is in it. There's lots of there's a girl that wears a blossom hat. The there's weasel? Lots of crop tops.
The weasel is in it? Pauly Shore?
Pauly Shore is in it, yeah. Does He's the Leaning Tower voice? Of Chisa guy.
He does like that voice, right? That's the only
the
thing.
The Leaning Tower of Chisa. Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to say it right now. Never seen it.
Okay, listen. We'll get there. Yeah, again. We'll get there.
Yeah. In 2027.
I just love this movie. I love this movie so, 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 so much. There are at least two really, really great songs in it, which are the pop songs that Powerline sings. Then Max acts out one of them, and then he's on stage for the other one. But it's also, like, super heartwarming. It's goofy, which you don't get a ton of goofy featured things. And Goofy and Max have this, like, sweet father-son, like, you know, learning about your teenage son and adjusting to your, you know, nerdy adult dad kind of thing. And it's heartwarming and it's fun. And I've seen it about 800 times and I just love it.
Goofy things. Goofy. I got a question for goofy stuff. So I've always taken it that I like the idea that when we see like Goofy, Mickey and Donald in cartoons, they're literally actors on a set. Like they're acting in a scene and this and that. So like Goofy always plays hobo Goofy usually, you know, a dumb Goofy. But is this movie like actual Goofy? He's not playing a character, but this is like a peek into Goofy's real life.
Yes.
Okay. I like it. I like
there's no like there's no acting at all. It's 100% like Max and Goofy's real life.
All right. Okay then. Does he actually wait, do they mention like is Goofy an actor?
I don't know that they don't mention what he does in the movie. Okay, okay.
I'm always curious about the meta on this stuff. I'm like, where do they ever do that, you know?
It's a spinoff from like the Goof Troop television series.
Okay.
And like if you watch like Max was also like he and Max were also in like the Once Upon and Twice Upon a Christmas movies.
Right.
And it kind of just built out of that. But Courtney, I don't know if you've seen it. Target now has a Powerline t-shirt in like the midsection.
So there's a lot of Powerline merchandise out right now. Just within the last year, there's been a ton of Powerline stuff. There's a store at our mall called Box Lunch. Have you been there, Ryan?
Yes.
If you haven't, you should go. So that store is all pop culture awesomeness, and they have like four different Powerline shirts there.
I will share a third film, And this movie, I'm going to give you some facts about this movie. It's edited terribly. It's written worse. It's the last semi-decent film for this director. I also own it on Criterion because Criterion's out of their mind and they think Armageddon deserved that honor. Armageddon's a bad movie. There's no getting around it. It's a bad movie. It's terrible. But I watch it more than any other Michael Bay film, maybe right below The Rock. The Rock is his best movie, without a doubt. But Armageddon is a movie that I remember when I first watched it, and I was like, that was good. That was a fun movie. And then everyone hated it. Hated it with such passion that I was so confused as to why everyone hated it. And as time gone by, that movie's real dumb. It's the jokes aren't really that funny. Ben Affleck with the animal crackers thing, it's not one of his best moments. There's some really like just dumb editing. They jump from scene to scene in that film like it's no one's business. But here's my argument for it. They have a cast of like, I don't know, 1,000 people that they're trying to follow plot lines on. You know that whole crew. Like every character makes sense, and they do it with a montage that's about 5 to 10 minutes long in the opening of the movie. Every one of those characters is crystal clear to you. Every single one of them. So I say it's a great movie, and I watch it all the time. Buscemi is like way beyond like normal Buscemi levels in it. But Peter Stormare is, you know, he's an angry Russian. That makes sense. So there are things in it that you just can't argue. And I challenge you to watch that movie and not get a little teared up when Liv Tyler says, "Dad," and you know, and Bruce Willis saves the Earth by blowing up a media. The movie's so dumb. There's a Godzilla reference in the beginning because it came out the same year as Godzilla, and it was like, we're going to be the big Hollywood tentpole film. So in the opening, is it the opening scene when they're in New York and the asteroids hit? I'm pretty sure it is. There's a guy who's actually selling a Godzilla inflatable doll, and a dog attacks him. He's like, "Get off my Godzilla, man." And that was Michael Bay's way of being like, "We got you, Godzilla. We got your nuts." Because I'm sure that's a thing that Michael Bay says. Like, without doubt, Michael Bay has said, "We've got your nuts" at one point while speaking to a film. So it's great. You should own it. Armageddon.
And this was that year that it was like the battle of who could get their asteroid movie out first. It was this and Deep Impact.
Yeah, it was this and Deep Impact. Yeah.
Deep Impact was a little bit more serious. This was a little bit more fun.
Yeah.
Like in how they handled it. And so, yeah, don't ever look at videos of the Armageddon experience at Disneyland Paris, because that's just a dumpster fire.
Oh, really?
But, oh, yeah. Actually, you should go look at videos of that.
I will watch videos of that. I will.
And, but yeah, no, it's a fun movie. You should totally watch it.
It's a great movie. It's a great movie. That's me, guys. That's William Fincher's in it. So you have to go see it. That's pretty much a rule. Ryan, is that three for all of us?
It's three, but I think we all have.
What do you got? I have some more. I have some more. You want to keep going? Keep going.
Yeah, let's keep going. This movie takes everything that you know about your childhood and says, no, it's not the way you. It's all dark and damaged and twisted. And I am, of course, referring to 85's Return to Oz.
Oh no!
Yeah. This was a consideration for me. This was a heavy consideration for me.
There's a lot of great things in this, but you know, the woman who's changing her heads, you get Firouza Balk in it as a child, and she'll go on to do, you know, wonderful things later. But she's playing Dorothy, and you know, and whatever you remember of The Wizard of Oz, this tells you, guess what? It's a much darker dystopian world than you think it is. And from the talking chicken to you get your Cowardly Lion, Tin Man kind of fix in really odd ways. You get a scarecrow with a pumpkin head, like, which I know it was before the time, but it definitely feels like Sandman-esque to me. Like, there's definitely pieces of the Neil Gaiman comic Sandman in this to me. But it is not like the happy-go-lucky Wizard of Oz that you remember. And it's just, it's very, very dark. But I remember watching this repeatedly growing up, and to the point where now it's like, yeah, that's a fine sequel. I could go with that.
Is this the one with the wheelie monkeys?
The wheelies. It's not the monk. They're not monkeys. They're just like guys with wheels, and they just start going, it's not like that Joker laugh to them.
I watched this maybe two times when I was a kid, and I was like, no, F that. I'm out.
Doesn't it open with electric shock therapy? Isn't that how the movie opens?
Yeah, they send her. Well, great. They send her. She opens, like, the farm's been destroyed, but she finds a key that has an O and a Z, and she's convinced it's the key to Oz. And finally, Auntie M has just had enough, and she sends her basically to to a psych ward. And yeah, they start doing electric shock therapy on her.
Jesus, not cool, man. Christ. Yeah, we're gonna get to that movie soonish. That's getting real close. Oh,
no. That's 85. Yeah, we're not too far off.
Yeah, we're not that far, because the 80s are kind of scarce with releases. Actually, the early 80s, or they're just weird. Courtney, what else did you have on your list?
Oh man, so I don't know how much. Okay, I know Pete has talked about liking this movie before, and I just think this is an underappreciated. It's a great movie. I think it's an underappreciated movie. I'm going to go with Enchanted. I just don't think people like... Number one, James Marsden in Enchanted is... Like, he is another underutilized actor. He does all this other crap that just doesn't show what he can do. He's an incredible comedic actor.
Yeah.
And in that movie, he's amazing. That movie's super funny. I don't necessarily love the songs in it. But it's like, you know, maybe audiences don't love a feel-good movie, but it is it's a feel-good movie. It's definitely a rom-com. But yeah, I really like Enchanted. I think it's sweet and fun.
When he dives down from the rock bridge in Central Park and starts singing and then gets run over by cyclists, it's one of the best things.
Yeah.
Also, one of my favorite parts, and it's, I don't know why, just immediately I think of it and start laughing. When... Who's turned into a mouse?
I don't even remember. Like, it's been a while since I've watched
her favorite, like her animated pal or something like that from the animated world gets turned into a mouse.
Yeah.
And he's trying to tell what's going on to James Marsden using, like, you know, ice cubes and this and that. And I just remember him saying, Giselle! And dying. There's some things I love it. That movie's phenomenal.
Yeah, it's so good.
How dare you not like the music? How dare you?
The only thing I even can remember about that movie music-wise is that song. How do you know that you love her?
That's,
and I think that's the worst song I've ever heard.
It's not. It's very repetitive. I have that song on my Disney playlist, and it goes on for like 2 minutes of just that chorus. But in the movie, you have the original dancers from Mary Poppins dancing during that time. So you know what? Watch it.
The scene is fine. I just don't care for the song so much.
What if I told you that Christian Bale did not get the Batman voice from himself? What if I told you that?
I would say, nonsense, sir.
It probably is. But if you watch Reign of Fire, you might be right. Reign of Fire is a Touchstone film, and it features Matthew McConaughey legitimately talking like this the whole movie. We've got to get the dragon. And guys, he's just Matthew McConaughey. He's just got a beard. He's real jacked in it. He's real big in this movie. But that's how he talks the whole movie. And he's not dressed like Batman. It's Christian Bale is the straight guy in this. Also, there's a scene where Christian Bale tells one of the old classic stories to the kids, and it's Star Wars. So Reign of Fire is a movie that came out in 2002 to the excitement of no one. And me and my friends watched it multiple times because there were two things that we just couldn't get over. One is that someone kind of offhandedly mentions that the male dragon is fertilizing the eggs as he flies over the town, which the visual of that was haunting, because we then made up diaries where we were like, day 17, still raining dragon. Like, I still don't know how that worked, but just the idea of it was just harrowing. The second is, it has one of the greatest uses of slow motion ever in a movie. Matthew McConaughey is face to face with a dragon, and he's breathing, and I'm not kidding, he's breathing. He actually yells at one point, "To London!" And it's really, really good. But Matthew McConaughey stands off face to face with a dragon. He runs at the dragon in slow motion, jumps off of a steel girder. He jumps about 30 feet, roughly, off a flat surface in slow motion directly into the mouth of a dragon. It accomplishes nothing. He just dies because it looked cool. The movie's so damn good. It's so damn good. If you haven't seen it, you really need to find it. Rain of Fire. I don't feel guilty about enjoying it, but that movie's bad. But it's really bad in like this great B film. They wouldn't make it now without everyone laughing out of the theater. I kind of guess I kind of laughed out of the theater then. But Rain of Fire, one of my favorite movies. And I've owned that on multiple ways. So Rain of Fire, 2002.
When you mentioned Christian Bale, I was like, oh, is he going to Newsies? Oh, please don't go to Newsies.
No, I'm not going to. I think that's too well liked. That's a popular thing. They actually just did a thing about the play.
Is much better.
That's what I've heard. I've heard the play is much better.
Yeah.
They're doing a Fathom screening of it, or they've done, and now they're like doing repeats of it, I guess.
Yeah, it came out last year, the year before last. Okay. And then they did, they put it back in theaters like for 2 days this past month or something.
Okay. You got another one, Ryan?
I got another one for you. Like it's Disney. I feel like I have to include at least something animated on this list somewhere. And look down upon, definitely. But I'm not sure how you do that when you have, you know, Mancini and Vincent Price tied to a movie. But The Great Mouse Detective is arguably not high in the Disney canon. It's, you know, it's basically Sherlock Holmes, but in mice form. And it was during the early 80s when Disney Animation was trying to find its footing again. I'm going to say it doesn't find it with this movie, but it's so much fun to watch. You know, you have this just the high-functioning sociopath of a mouse. You have, you know, mice doing can-can dances. You have a peg leg bat. You have, you know, Vincent Price playing your villain, where the final fight takes place in the gears of Big Ben, because he's trying to usurp the mouse throne of the UK. Like, it's just, it really is ridiculously, the thing that it's bad, but it's so bad that I'm like, this is
bad?
Wonderful.
I've never seen it. It's something that I've always wanted to see. I've never seen it. Is it bad?
It's so, especially when you consider that it comes out around the same time as An American Tale, and you have mice like trying to. There's a lot of you feel a lot of similarities there, and it's definitely the lesser of those two films. But it's just Vincent Price plays this so well, and you have the music of Mancini. Like, it's wonderful. Like, it's wonderfully bad. Like, that's where it is. But I will still put that on and enjoy just the hell out of it.
An American Tale, that was okay. I was checking, because I know American Tale, it usually gets credited to Spielberg. Like, it's always like, that was a Spielberg one. But that was Don Bluth.
It was Don Bluth, yeah.
Yeah, who had just left Disney and went off to do that.
Right.
Yeah, God, what was the song in American Tale? Somewhere Out There.
Somewhere Out There,
that was a massive song, man.
That song makes me cry so hard.
Yeah, it's
like, anytime I hear it, I'm just like, massive tears.
Face faucet.
Yeah.
You got another one, Courtney?
I do. I have at least four more.
Oh my God.
But I mean, they're honorable mentions. It's not like something I need to talk a lot about. I'm going to go with one that you will both probably say is horrible.
Mm.
And that's George of the Jungle with Brendan Fraser.
Oh no, 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 ma'am. No, ma'am.
I adore the crap out of that movie.
Let me tell you that I can remember the hardest I've laughed in films usually when the guy looks at the movie and he says, "This is the part where we all laugh at the villain." And they laugh.
Yeah.
One of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life.
I think that movie is one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. Yeah. Brendan Fraser is, well, I like him in a lot of things. Like, I'm a fan. A lot of people maybe aren't, but I'm a fan. I think he's so, so, so good in this movie. Thomas Hayden Church is in this movie, who is one of my favorites of all time, period, hands down. And Leslie Mann is in this before she's like Leslie Mann that we know now.
Yeah, she is ridiculously attractive in this movie, too.
Speaking of ridiculously attractive, have you seen Brendan Fraser in this movie?
Yeah, he is. He's like, if it was the 30s, he would have been the biggest thing of all time.
He was one of my first crushes. Like, we've got Jeff Goldblum up there. Brendan Fraser's definitely up there. Like, it's something about shirtless men. I don't know. You know.
Sure.
Shirtless jacked men. What a terrible thing to look at. I watched this movie a ton again when I was a kid. Major nostalgia factor for me, and I just think it's a fun movie.
That's a good pull. That is a good pull. All right. So I got two others. I'm going to save the last one for last because it's definitely the worst film on my list. I want to go back to 1997 really quick. Disney wasn't done putting out some trash. Rocket Man. Rocket Man's a bad movie. Rocket Man. Harlan Williams, is that his name? Harlan Williams.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you one of the lines of the movie, and then we're just going to move on pretty much. I'll first say Shelley Duvall and Lotho are in it. I don't know what Lotho's real name is. But Lotho from Beetlejuice, I'm pretty sure that's his parents. There's a great part where Harlan Williams imitates the Cowardly Lion, which makes me laugh every time. William Sadler is in this. I have seen William Sadler's junk in person, live, because I saw him on Broadway in Julius Caesar with Denzel Washington. And there was a scene where he was like getting a massage, and he just decided to get up and walk around without his towel. So that stuck with me. It's like second row seats for that.
I bet it did.
Yeah, bet it did. I was like, I remember that man's bare ass from Die Hard 2. And then he was like, well, what about the front? And I'm like, well, all right. It's the price of a ticket, I guess. And so, he's in it too. Phenomenal actor. Here's something that said, have fun, kid. Fun is my Chinese neighbor's middle name.
What?
Yeah. So...
just no.
I'm getting a tweet from Disney right now that they are going to remove Harlan Williams from Rocket Man for his disgraceful comments numbers of years ago. But yeah, Rocket Man's hysterical. It's actually really funny. John J. Jekyll Habo Schmidt, that whole scene in the isolation tanks is great. They use multiple smash cuts of a man screaming while sitting up in his sleep. If you haven't seen Rocket Man, I won't say I can't say it's good, but damn it, it is funny. It's got some really funny parts. Ryan, what do you got? Let's do one more for the table.
Yeah, sure. This is arguably the worst movie I have on this list. I can't believe I'm actually going to admit that I watch this on a semi-regular basis, is The Haunted Mansion.
Oh, yes.
This is so bad. It's so bad. The Haunted Mansion is just, it's this classic. It's a wonderful attraction. And then we turned it over to Eddie Murphy and turned it into a ridiculously horrible movie. Terrence Stamp, Jennifer Tilly, Wallace Shawn, they're wonderful in their parts. There's no way they save this movie. It's so bad. But I will... occasionally watch it just for the pieces that, like, and that's an attraction piece, and that's an attraction piece, and that's an attraction piece. I keep waiting for the day they remake a Haunted Mansion movie the way it should be done, But until then, this is what we've got. And I will on occasion watch this just to be like, all right, I, you know, there's 2 hours of my life I'm going to lose again. It's bad. But I will watch it on, you know, a rare occasion.
I've never seen it. Jennifer Tilly sounds like the perfect, I'm assuming she's Madame Leota, and that sounds perfect.
Yes.
I will say, I think the best Haunted Mansion movie was made, and it's called Crimson Peak. I still think it's called The Haunted Mansion.
Right. I agree with you on that.
I know it's
might be a little adult for Haunted Mansion.
Yeah, but you can tell that a lot of the things that he was going to put visually in one, not plot wise, but visually, a lot of what is in Crimson Peak probably came from what was going to be Guillermo del Toro's Haunted Mansion movie. But yeah, it's a bit of a tonal difference.
Yeah.
Courtney, what do you got there?
So my last one is also definitely the worst movie on my list for sure. And that's The Brave Little Toaster.
How dare you? My uncle worked on that film.
Wait.
That's a bad movie. I mean, come on, guys. You both have nostalgia for it as well, obviously.
What? I have literal family members who worked on it.
I love this movie. I love it. I mean, would you say that overall?
No, it's the movie that got John Lasseter first time released from Disney. I mean, I look at that movie and I'm like, that was when Disney was being run very poorly.
Yeah.
Like, that's the movie that I point to because of what happened with Lasseter and, you know, basically being kicked out of the door because he wanted to try something different, but it wasn't going to save the money. Like, no matter how endearing I find the, you know, how much I like the rest of the movie, it is very, like, it's the poster child for when I think things were going very bad.
Right.
Yeah.
And the fact that they made sequels to this movie.
Yeah, multiple. Yeah. I don't know. I love this movie. This is the first movie I ever remember, like, as a person. This movie came out the year I was born. It's the first movie I ever remember watching.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I ever remember. And I watched it a ton when I was really, really little. And it really does have some great voice cast. You have John Lovitz. You have Phil Hartman. You have Mindy Sterling. You have Thurl Ravenscroft as Kirby, which I think that, like, that goes all the way to my love of Thurl Ravenscroft today. I may not have known it at the time, but yeah, I mean, you've got Thurl as a vacuum. That's pretty legit. I mean, Thurl is anything, but Thurl is a vacuum for sure. yeah, I haven't watched it in years and years and years, but as soon as I started kind of like looking for stuff for the show, I was like, I mean, obviously that has to be on there. Nobody watches that anymore. Nobody talks about that anymore. But yeah, first one I ever remember, and I would watch it. I'd watch it right now.
We'll get there eventually.
So. Yes.
All right. So my final film is another Touchstone. It is. I mean, it is Disney by degrees, but it's still Disney. Let's think it is. I did the research on this. I'm pretty sure it is. What if I told you that there is a movie with Don Ameche, Kirk Douglas, Tim Curry, Marissa Tomei, Chaz Palminteri, and Harry Shearer? Sound all right to you?
Yeah, sure.
All right. What if I told you none of them was the lead in the movie? None of them is the lead. None of them. It's a comedic film. The lead is played by Sylvester Stallone.
No.
As Angelo Provolone in the 1991 dumpster fire of a comedy, Oscar. The name Provolone being their last, that's a joke in the film. That's an actual legitimate joke. I first saw this movie on WPIX on an afternoon that I had nothing else to do because I don't know why else the hell I would have watched it. It is a screwball comedy. It's very fast moving. Marissa Tomei is actually really good in it. So is Chaz Palminteri. He's actually the best part of it as Connie. Everything about this movie is just the worst example of people thinking that they're funny, but I laugh my ass off at it. I don't know what it is about it. I don't know why I gravitated to it. It was, it's kind of, I guess as an Italian, I should probably find a lot of it offensive, but I don't care because everyone in it also is like heavy Italian. So everyone's in on the joke. I don't care. Tim Curry is scrupulous as usual, or non-scrupulous. Let's get that backwards. Oscar is one of the worst films ever made. And it is also a movie that people love. So it really turned into this. This is one of those cult stupid movies. If you look up user reviews, there's a growing thing of like, this movie's not half bad. But when the movie first came out, it was like, that was the Razzie film. It was the Razzie film. So when I look back at all the strange, awful times that Disney has released films under that Touchstone banner, Oscar is that shining beacon of stupid that I keep going back to. It's no Rocket Man, but it's quite damn awful. So there you go. What else? Just name them. What were the other films on your guys' list? Because this was all I had.
That's pretty much all I had for my list.
Court, you had a couple extras?
Yeah, I have a couple others. I don't know that they necessarily count in the guilty pleasure category. Uh-huh. I think some people might think that, but I have Bedknobs and Broomsticks as well as The Parent Trap on my list.
Oh, no, I think those are just genuinely good films.
Yeah.
Wait, which Parent Trap are you talking about?
Oh, the original.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just making sure.
I think they're great films, too. I think maybe those fall more under the category of like underappreciated films or maybe not as watched.
Yeah, I think Bedknobs and Broomsticks is kind of, I don't know, gone by the wayside?
Yeah.
Some weird way.
The same as a lot of these older ones. Peach Dragon, Parent Trap, Bedknobs and Broomsticks, yeah. Summer Magic even, like a lot of those.
Oh, God. Condor Man. Movies, guys. They're not all good, but you can love all of them. That was today's lesson. If anything, that was today's lesson. Movies, they're not good, but you can still love them.
We're going to hit a real long streak of Touchstone pictures, too, coming up.
Yeah, I know. Like, we got to be picky.
Yeah.
Be picky.
There's, even picky, I'm sitting here going, I'm like, I got at least like 8. And I'm like, no.
Because there's like bad entertaining and then there's bad bland. Like there's definitely like that. Like Pirates of the Caribbean 4. It's not only is it bad, it's bland.
Yeah.
That movie's not good. We gotta do that.
I prefer it over 2 and 3 though. I will watch that any day over 2 and 3.
You'll watch that's the one with Ian McShane. You like that one over 2 and 3? 2 and 3 are real messes, aren't they?
Yeah,
they are.
Jesus, there's so much going on. You're like, why is this going on? Simplify this, guys.
Yeah.
It's so sad because the first one was so just enjoyable.
So good.
Just so enjoyable. And I don't know how they went so wrong.
Well, you look at it, that was when they were going through the formula of, you know, we're going to do attraction movies. Now we're going to do movies based on attractions. They got the first Pirates right. But then they also did Country Bears and Haunted Mansion, which are both not good in any sense of that word.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think also the thing with the first Pirates movie was like they made it, but then no one expected it to be what it became. Mm-hmm. And so after it was a hit, there was a big push like, oh, we got to do more of these. And they're like, all right. How fast do you want them? Like now.
Yeah. Right?
And I think that's sort of where they went because the plot became so convoluted. Such a mess that, you know, everyone was like every other second there was like, oh no, now I'm going to backstab you. It's like, oh, I'm going to backstab you. It's like, no, I don't care anymore.
And we have to keep adding, and we have to keep making Jack a bigger and bigger character.
Yeah,
and
like too big, way too big.
It's the same thing, like, you know, 2 and 3, really, there's probably a decent movie in there if you had put them together and trimmed a bunch.
Yeah.
There's probably a really solid second film in there, but they were trying to drag it out, and you end up with a mess.
There's one joke in the second and third film, there's only one joke that I remember, because I thought it was really good. So when they escape the cannibal ones, the cannibal camp, they're climbing up. There's two groups of guys. There's two groups of people, survivors. And they're climbing up and they're like, you know, what's his name? Will is like, all right, guys, we all got to make it up there together so we can get the ship out of there. And then one of the other guys in the other like skeleton thing that they're climbing up, he's like, well, not really. It only takes about 5 or 6 to handle the boat. And then both groups just look at each other and realize they don't need the other one to survive. And the guy who says, he's like, oh, dear. And then they start going really fast. And it was that reaction of like, oh, dear, that I just loved. I don't know. And then the finale of 3 is so bad. It's so bad. There's like 1,000 pirate ships, but no one does anything but watch.
Yeah.
Madame Gao was there from the Avengers, from the Defenders. And all she does is scream. She literally just like puts her hands up in the air. She's like, ah, like in victory later. Like they didn't do anything. Yeah. All those pirate ships who were like celebrating, none of them did anything. They just watched. Those pirates suck. Ladies and gentlemen, that's been another episode of Disney Magic Hour. We're going to be back next week with other things. There were some massive news things that came out just yesterday. We're going to hold that and table it for another time. But we'll be talking about the Fox thing and the Star Wars casting announcement for 9, where people be there. It's people dead in canon, people dead in life. They're all back. Everyone's back, baby. Everyone's back. So have a good weekend. And Ryan, where can everyone find the Main Street Gazette?
They can find it at mainstgazette.com. It's mainstgazette on Twitter and Instagram. And if you search for our page on Facebook, just search for Main Street Gazette and you'll find it.
And who are we? We are Last Gen Podcast. It's lastgenpodcast.com. We have a Twitter, at DizMagicHourPod. We are a group on Facebook called Disney Magic Hour. We have the iTunes. We have the Google Play Music. We have the Stitcher. We're on all of them. All of them, baby. We have an Instagram. It's at Disney Magic Hour Podcast. Melissa runs that, does a hell of a job, hell of a job. And we have a Patreon, patreon.com/Disney Magic Hour. If you ever have any questions about that, message me. You can do that. That's a thing. Courtney, books?
Yes.
Books.
Books. You can join us for the DMH Book Club on Facebook. Just search for DMH Book Club. And we are reading a series currently. We're about to start a novella. And then I think we're going to start the next series of books. But please come over, give us some ideas, give us some feedback, and join us for the fun.
And while you're at it, guys, if you're going to go on vacation, you should go over to mei-travel.com because they're going to take care of everything you need for visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, traveling anywhere around the globe. Visit the experts over at mei-travel.com. Becky and her team get you going on your own adventure. Till next week, have a good week. Is that swipe? No, I'll put this out tomorrow, so you'll have a little bit of your weekend left. But have a good week. Be safe out there. Be good to each other. Life is chaos. Be kind. Say goodnight, Courtney.
Good night, Courtney.
Say goodnight, Ryan.
Good night, Ryan.
Good night, Pete.